There was little surface space left, so they built up. One wall in the living room had built-in storage that started at about 7 feet. I hopped up on the small, ratty love seat that served as my living room furniture and stood on the back, balancing as I opened different compartments. "What are you doing? You're going to fall." Brody walked over and reached up to my waist, steadying me as I searched through the storage cupboards. He moved with me, making sure I didn't fall as I walked the length of the couch top, inspecting and closing different doors. When I reached the last one, I found the shoes shoved into the top corner and had to stand on my tippy toes to reach them. "Got 'em!" I waved the shoes in the air like I'd just won a prize. Brody lowered me back to the ground as if he were lifting a carton of empty milk. When he took his hands away, I longed for them. God, I miss his touch. Turning to face him, it was easy to slip back into a comfortable place. I wrapped my hand around his bicep and squeezed. "Thanks for the lift. Big muscles. Have you been working out?" He chuckled.
"Get your shoes on, wise ass."
That one unexpected moment, something so completely insignificant as Brody helping me reach my shoes and then joking around, made me feel more like my old self than I had in years.
"Bring an overnight bag. I want you to stay at the hotel again tonight, and tomorrow night, too."
"I'm fine here, Brody. I appreciate it, though. Can you just do it for me?" The man had no idea what I would be willing to do for him. I nodded and threw the clothes I'd picked up for the service in an overnight bag. On the way out, I heard voices coming from my neighbor's apartment. Lena and Abby's apartment. "Can you just give me a minute?" I listened before knocking. Brody stood behind me. The familiar sound of rusted locks clanked, and then Abby opened the door. Her face lit up, and she ran to hug my legs, catching me by surprise.
"Can we go to the park again?"
I smiled at the little ball of energy. "Not today. I'm going somewhere with my friend. This is Brody." She looked at Brody, found zero that interested her, and returned her attention to me.
"When you're done?"
"I'm actually going to be busy for a few days." I looked into her apartment. "Is your mom here?"
"No. Grandma brought me to get more clothes."
With that, Sophie appeared. "Didn't I tell you not to open the door?" she scolded.
"It was only Willow."
Sophie put her hands on her hips.
"And how did you know it was Willow? Did you ask who it was, Abby?"
Abby looked at me, then back to her grandmother.
"No,"
she sulked.
"I forgot again."
Her grandmother tried to hide a smile. "We'll work on it." She turned her attention to me.
"Hi, Willow. Don't you look pretty?"
"Thank you. I heard voices and wanted to see if everything was okay."
Her eyes pointed to her granddaughter. "Everything is good. Abby is probably going to stay with me for a while."
I read between the lines. She was probably going to stay with her because she had no idea where the hell her daughter had disappeared to. The situation brought me back 20 years. Thankfully, Abby had Sophie, like I'd had Marlene.
"Well, aren't you lucky, Abby? I used to spend a lot of time with my grandmother, too. Her house was one of my favorite places in the world to go when I was your age."
Sophie smiled. "We're going to have a great time, aren't we, Abby?"
Abby and I were lucky. I shuddered to think of what life was like for the girls who didn't have a Sophie or a Marlene.
"We have to get going, but you have my number. If there is anything I can do to help..."
Abby interrupted, jumping up and down.
"Like take me to the park?"
I chuckled. "Yes, like take Abby to the park. Just give me a call. I work nights, so I have time during the days." Sophie thanked us for stopping by, and then Brody and I headed to the car.
What was that all about?
Abby's mom was sober for a few months. She went off the wagon a few days ago. I found her partying with a dealer while Abby was home, so I took her to the park to get her out of there. When things got worse, I called her grandmother and brought her there.
Brody nodded. I don't think this is a great place for you to be.
A group of thug-looking teenagers were circling his fancy car when we walked up. I looked at Brody. I can't imagine what would make you say that.
He walked right up to the scary-looking teens. What's up, guys?
Shit, man! You're Brody fucking Easton!
I am.
He extended his hand, and their demeanors went from street thug to sports idolizing little boys immediately.
You guys watching my car for me?
Those are some nice-looking rims you got there. We didn't know this sweet piece belonged to you.
Brody opened my car door and waited until I got in. I couldn't hear what he was saying, but he talked to the man boys for another minute before shaking hands again and getting in. Making friends?
Making you friends. Told them to keep an eye on you.
I'm capable of taking care of myself.
You don't belong in this neighborhood.
No, you don't belong in this neighborhood. I fit in perfectly fine. I think you're forgetting who I am. He started the car and put it into gear.
You're right, he mumbled under his breath. I need to remember that.
I expected perhaps a nurse or two to show up to the church. I was not prepared for hundreds of people who attended Marlene's service. Not a single person was there because of me. The large church was packed with friends and teammates of Brody's. I don't know why I was surprised. Everyone loved the man. He introduced me to a few people, and the first chance I got, I excused myself to go sit in a pew. Right before the service was about to start, Brody walked to the front row to join me. His hand was meshed with his girlfriend's, and there was another woman with them. Luckily, the priest began to speak, forcing any uncomfortable introductions to wait. The service was simple, and I thought I had gotten through it without falling apart, until the priest asked if anyone would like to get up and say a few words, and Brody stood. He talked about how his mother had died when he was 7, and his dad had never remarried. The one grandmother he had lived a country away, and he had no real experience with girls. That got a good chuckle from the audience. Then he told a story I had never heard.
After my mom's burial, everyone came back to our house. I don't remember too much, but I remember people were sitting around talking and laughing. I didn't get how they could be smiling when my mother had just been buried. So I went outside to stew a bit, and my neighbor, Marlene, found me out front on the stoop. She sat down next to me and tried to get me to talk, but I wasn't much in the mood. After a while, she told me to follow her, and we went back to her house next door. She took me into the kitchen and started asking me to grab things for her. Vanilla, milk, flour. She'd point to the cabinet where they were, and I'd get them out. Eventually, we started to talk while she made cookies. When we were done, I remember sitting down at her kitchen table with a big glass of milk and a tower of oatmeal raisin cookies in front of me. She explained that there were going to be days in life that would be very hard, and the best way to get through them was to find one good thing to focus on. My mom had just died, and it was pretty impossible to find good in anything, but Marlene was so nice to me, I didn't want to disappoint her. So, before I left to go back to my house, I thanked her and told her that the one good thing for me was her making me cookies that day. I've never told anyone this, and Marlene and I never discussed it. But for the next 20-odd years, I'd often discover a batch of oatmeal raisin cookies left where I could find them. In 5th grade, when I flipped over my bicycle handlebars trying to do a wheelie and broke my arm. Warm oatmeal raisin cookies kept me company that night. In eighth grade, when I threw an interception that lost the playoff game against our biggest rival, there was a Tupperware full of cookies on my doorstep. Senior year, when I didn't get into my first pick of colleges, cookies. 5 years ago, when my dad retired to Arizona and we packed the last of his things in the moving truck, cookies in the front seat of my unlocked car after I hugged my dad goodbye. This morning, on my way here, I stopped off at the bakery around the corner from where I grew up. It was Marlene's favorite bakery. I bought a bag full of oatmeal raisin cookies. For more than 20 years, she kept up making me those cookies, and every time it would bring me a smile. But this morning, as I ate one, it just wasn't the same. You know why? Because it was never the cookies. It was the lady who took the time to recognize I might not have anything to smile about and made sure to give me a reason. She was my reason. Marlene is survived by her daughter, Amanda, and her granddaughter, Willow. She may not have been my blood, but she was there through all my sweat and tears. So she's my family, too. I know Marlene wouldn't want any of us to cry today. She'd want us all to find that one good thing and hang on to it until things get better. But to truly honor the life of Marlene Garner, the next time you see someone having a bad day, make them a batch of oatmeal raisin cookies in her honor. It could mean more than you'll ever know. I was overwhelmed with emotions when Brody was done. When he returned to his seat between Delilah and me, he saw me crying and leaned down to whisper, "Find that one good thing that this brings, Willow. It's what she'd want you to do." My breath stuttered as I looked up at him. I kept quiet, but all I could think was, "This brought me back to you." Delilah, Chapter 34. After the graveside service, I had to go back to my office, and Brody had to go to practice. Tomorrow morning, I was due to head up to Buffalo for the day for an interview, and I hadn't even started my research. This time of the year, right before playoffs began, the station spent a lot of time and money gathering interviews with prospective playoff teams. Depending on who actually made it in, a lot of them would be archived and never aired. Buffalo was a long shot for a last-minute wild-card slot in the playoffs. My desk was a mess of papers when Indy interrupted. It was already almost 8, and I had more work to do before I called it a night. But her visit was a welcome distraction anyway. She plopped down on the visitor's chair in my office, a box in her hands. "Come on in. I wasn't busy." I waved at the disaster that made me look busy. But the truth of the matter was, I couldn't really focus. The sadness in Brody's face, the way his voice broke as he spoke in church today, had deeply affected me. It was all I could think about.
"I made you something."
"You made me something?" She looked around my office. "Is there an echo in here?" "I'll probably regret it." I tossed my pen onto the desk and leaned back in my chair. "But let's see what you made." Indy reached into the box. "This is you." She had constructed a stick figure of sorts. Binder clips had been snapped together in various ways to make two legs, two arms, and a body. The metal of two clips formed a neck and attached a stapler remover that acted as a head. The way the staple remover had its mouth open, with sharp prongs, made the figure look more like a roaring dinosaur with sharp teeth.
"I think you have too much time on your hands."
"I've had 2 hours a day to fill since you haven't been around to hang out with the last few days."
She reached into her box again and pulled out another creation.
"This is Brody."
The carefully created clip art look just like the one of me, only a full head taller.
We look like we could be related.
I arched an eyebrow. She ignored me and took another creation out of the box. This one was easy to identify. It was a snake sculpted out of paper clips. The body coiled around and again. A staple remover was attached as the head. At least the fangs and open mouth seemed a little more realistic on a snake. She placed it on my desk with the other two.
Why do you have three staple removers?
I don't. I came into your office while you were in Mr. Cum's meeting and stole the one out of your top right drawer. I saw Fred Nagel was in the meeting, too, so I stopped by his office on my way back and swiped one from him. By the way, why does his office smell like ass?
I laughed for the first time in days. I didn't know it smelled.
You mean you haven't sniffed the entire floor yet?
Shut up. Indy rearranged her figure art on my desk, moving the snake between Brody and me.
The snake's name is Willow.
Why am I not surprised? After the service yesterday, Indy had talked my ear off. While I was focused on Brody, Indy had been watching Willow. She was certain from the way that Willow gazed at Brody that the woman was using Brody's sympathy to get close to him again. I didn't know what her intentions were, but I couldn't stop thinking about how Brody felt about her. Seeing them standing together at the church had made everything I knew about their history so much more real. Does he still love her? What if he wanted to give things a second chance, now that she was clean?
You need to get in there and put an end to the walk down memory lane.
They just lost someone they love. They have a lot of history. If I can't trust him to mourn with her, then I can't trust him at all, and it's not meant to be. Indy threw her hands up in the air.
That's crap. We don't leave everything up to fate. We fight for the shit we want.
What if he still loves her?
Then you'll get hurt. I'll buy you ice cream, and we'll both gain 5 pounds sitting on your couch watching Nicholas Sparks movies for a month.
I thought about it for a moment. Will it be Ben and Jerry's Cherry Garcia?
With chocolate sauce on top.
I took a deep breath. He asked me to meet them for dinner tonight. They're having dinner with some people who worked at the nursing home where Marlene lived.
And you said no?
I told him I had a lot to do before I left in the morning.
Like what?
Research.
On?
The team.
You know every statistic for every team in the damn NFL. Whatever you think you need to learn, you don't.
She was probably right. I glanced at the time on my phone. Dinner is probably half over already.
Go bring him dessert.
Willow. Chapter 35. Laughing over dinner with a man more than twice his age was the first time I saw the old Brody I knew. The 16-year-old boy who was filled with cocky arrogance, yet unlike most boys his age, had everything to back up that arrogance. Even more so today. I watched as Brody swallowed a bit of his meal, mesmerized by the squareness of his jawline. The angles had become even more prominent over the years, turning a boy with some softness in his features to a man with hard, chiseled lines. The start of a 5 o'clock shadow ran along his tanned jaw, bringing a darker shade to his skin that made his pale green eyes appear even more startling. He caught me staring and furrowed his brows, then gave me a hint of a smile that made me feel like we were the only two in on a secret, before he went back talking to Grouper. I was quiet while we finished our meal. As the seconds ticked by, I became acutely aware that we had only hours left. After tonight, there was really no reason for us to see each other. Marlene had been the only thing that bound us together at this point, and she was gone. The thought created a physical ache in my chest.
You okay?
After we had said goodbye to Gruber and Shannon, Brody and I walked to the elevator bank together. I nodded. He pushed the 7 button for me and 33 for him. When we reached my floor, I stepped out, and Brody held one arm up against the top of the sliding doors, stopping them from closing.
I have practice at 9. Coach has been good about my missing and being late the last week. But if I'm not back on time tomorrow, he's gonna have my ass. I'll meet you for breakfast at 7 and drop you on my way.
Uptown wasn't on his way at all, but I agreed anyway. I'd take whatever I could get. My hotel room was quiet. I'd always hated the quiet. It left nothing to drown out my thoughts. More so now that I was sober. That was the most difficult part of sobriety. The inability to escape my own thoughts. Over the last few years, I'd thought of Brody almost daily. But over the last few weeks, I'd found myself constantly wondering what things would have been like for us if I had never disappeared that last time. If my life hadn't spiraled out of control, would we still be together? Be married? My thoughts were always filled with, what if? I showered and flicked on the TV for company, burying myself under the covers in an attempt to get lost in a show. The first channel I landed on, a couple was in the throes of a passionate kiss. Brody was an amazing kisser. So dominant and controlling, he didn't kiss gently. There was always a rawness to the way his mouth consumed mine. I reached up and ran my fingers over my lips, letting my eyes flutter closed in memory. What if? I flipped the channel. FX was replaying a series that had wrapped up last year, Sons of Anarchy, an inside look at motorcycle gangs. It was filled with guns and violence. Perfect. I watched for a few minutes. Then suddenly, the scene of a group of leather-vest-wearing bikers in a clubhouse was over, and I was staring at the tattooed back of a naked blonde man. The camera panned down to the man's taut ass as he furiously pumped inside of a woman. She moaned. Brody was so good with that incredible body. God, it had been a long time since a man had made me moan. What if? I flipped the channel again. ESPN was showing highlights from last weekend's football games. The Philadelphia quarterback sailed the ball into the end zone and into the hands of a wide receiver. He pumped his fist and celebrated the game win. Brody and I used to celebrate game wins in his bedroom. I literally shook the thought from my head and clicked the remote. What if? I needed to clear my head of Brody. Flipping back to the hotel's information channel, I gave up on television and clicked on music. The screen displayed choices like Top 40, classic rock, hip-hop, and country. I picked classic rock. Bad Company's Feel Like Making Love streamed through the television. God, I really did. I listened to Paul Rogers sing about golden dreams of yesterday for as long as I could. When I couldn't take it anymore, I flipped to country music. Alan Jackson's Remember When blared about remembering your first time. Brody was my first. The universe was completely out to get me. Or maybe it was a sign. What if? There were dozens of songs on my playlist that reminded me of Brody. I always skipped over them, but never deleted any. What if? After tomorrow, there would be nothing keeping us connected. I didn't want to spend a lifetime hitting skip, always wondering, what if? It was time I deleted them all and moved on, or let the songs play. My life was filled with so many regrets. In that moment, I knew if I didn't at least try, it would be the decision I regretted the most.
I ripped the covers back, got out of bed and dressed, my mind jumping all over the place. The chances of Brody still having any feelings other than disdain and hatred for me were practically non-existent. But what if? I had forgotten to give Brody his elevator key card back the other day. He wouldn't even know I was coming up to his suite until he opened the door. Not giving myself enough time to think about all the reasons I shouldn't, I took the elevator to the penthouse. I had no idea what I was going to say or do. I only knew it was my last chance, and I didn't want to live wondering what if. Brody answered on the first knock. He was still wearing the slacks from his suit, but his dress shirt and belt were unbuttoned. God, he's magnificent.
Willow?
I still hadn't said a word.
Everything okay?
I shook my head, and we stared at each other for a long moment. Can I come in? For a second, I thought he might turn me away. He closed his eyes, but when he reopened them, he stepped aside for me to enter. Delilah, Chapter 36. Indy would have laughed at me. I stood in line at the late-night grocery down the street from the Regency with an assortment of pastries from the bakery counter that was just about to close. When she'd told me to bring Brody dessert, cannolis had been the furthest thing from her mind. I knew I was totally stalling. After Drew, I'd never thought I would feel like this about another man. When Brody's name flashed on my screen, it made me smile. Seeing him in person made my heart beat faster. Sometimes I read a simple text from him a dozen times. The thing was, with Drew, it was different. I could make a list of a million things I loved about him. I thought that was what true love was. Logical, practical. Love was a list of tangible things that said he was the right guy. But with Brody, I couldn't find the words to describe what I felt about him. I could probably make a list of a million reasons I should have stayed away, yet I knew in my heart he was the one. My soul had picked him, not my mind. The checkout line was flanked by racks of seasonal impulse buy items. Pink school erasers with turkeys stamped on them, small painted pumpkins, packs of NFL trading cards. I brought the eraser to my nose, the smell reminding me of elementary school. I tossed a few in my basket, along with a handful of trading card packages. By the time the cashier got to me, my stall had cost me $33. The empty elevator made up for lost time. It sped up to Brody's floor so fast, my head felt a little lightheaded when I stepped off. A mixture of excitement and nervousness hit me as I raised my hand to the door. My knock was light, but echoed through the quiet hallway. I waited. My heartbeat accelerated as the seconds passed. Maybe he was sleeping already? I knocked again. The second time, louder. Footsteps vibrated on the floor as they neared. When the door swung open, I lifted the cannolis, dangling the bakery box by its red and white string. Thought you might like some dessert? Brody was still dressed in the clothes he'd worn to the service. Well, actually, it looked as if he had just been interrupted from undressing. His white dress shirt was unbuttoned, the belt on his fitted slacks was hanging loose, and his feet were already bare. My first thought when I saw him was, what a waste it was to buy cannolis when there are better things to eat. I smiled, but something in his eyes made my heart sink before he uttered a word. He turned, glancing back into his hotel suite. When he faced me, his expression said everything.
I wasn't expecting you.
Should I leave?
No. It's just... Willow came up a few minutes ago, and...
Willow is in your hotel room with you?
He dragged his hand through his hair. It's not what it looks like, I swear.
Then tell me. What is it?
I peered into Brody's suite and saw Willow standing in the living room. Her feet were bare, and she was watching us from a distance. She needed a friend. It's been a rough few days.
And you were going to console her while you were half-dressed in your hotel room?
That's not what I was going to do.
Tell me then,
I raised my voice.
What the fuck were you going to do?
Nothing. I couldn't turn her away.
Why not?
Brody held my stare. Because I couldn't. I dropped the cannoli box and turned back to the elevator. The damn car had already disappeared. I pushed the button 20 times, desperate to get the hell out of there. The door to Brody's suite slammed closed, and for a second I thought he had gone back inside. But then he was behind me. He put his hand on my hip. Don't go. Please. Nothing happened, I swear. Thankfully, the elevator car came quickly. I stepped inside and turned to Brody.
I actually believe you.
I don't think anything physical happened between the two of you.
That's not why I need to go.
Then why?
You need to figure that out on your own.
We stared at each other as the doors slid closed. I held the tears at bay until I hit the street. Then everything flooded all at once. The sadness, the disappointment, the heartbreak. I gasped for air, leaning against the outside of the hotel, bent over and holding my knees. Brody must have taken the next elevator down, because I saw him running out the door just as I climbed into a cab and sped away. The cab pulled to the curb outside of my apartment building, and then I decided I didn't want to go home. I changed my mind. Can you take me down to Chelsea? 155 West 22nd Street?
You're paying the fare from where I picked you up.
Of course. I could have cared less if the fare was $500. I just knew I didn't want to go home. It was almost 10, but Indy wouldn't care. Staring out the window at the street as we headed back into traffic, I didn't cry. It was as if my insides were hollowed out, and even though I wanted to cry... wanted to get it out of my system. The tears couldn't fight their way through the vast emptiness to escape. I walked into Indy's building in a fog. In the elevator, I stared at the button panel, unable to figure out what I was supposed to do. Luckily, an older gentleman walked in with a small dog on a leash and took charge.
What floor?
7.
After I had said it, I wasn't even sure it was the right answer. The hallway smelled like marijuana, confirming I had gotten off on the right floor. Indy's neighbor, Devin, was a pothead. I knocked lightly, and she opened the door without asking who it was. A smile lit her face when she saw me standing there, but it quickly fell.
"Oh, honey."
She had no idea what had happened, yet she pulled me into her apartment by wrapping me in a hug. Tears threatened, but they still didn't come.
"Come on."
She led me into the kitchen and flicked on the light. "Sit." She pointed to a chair, and I complied. Honestly, I'm glad it was Indy I turned to, because I was so lost, I would have taken orders from a complete stranger. She opened the cabinets, pulled out bowls, and proceeded to scoop 2 heaping servings of Ben & Jerry's. Placing one in front of me, she slid me a spoon and then sat across from me.
"What happened?"
"Can we talk about something else? I don't know. The weather? Work? Global warming? Anything else?" She nodded and shoved a spoonful of ice cream into her mouth.
I'm thinking about sleeping with Devin. The pothead? He fucks like a jackrabbit.
I almost cracked a smile. Almost. How would you know that?
We share a bedroom wall.
He takes 10 minutes to spit out a sentence. He's always so damn mellow. How is that even possible? She shrugged.
You just interrupted a good session. You want to go listen?
Think I'll pass. She was quiet for a few minutes.
You sure you don't want to talk about it?
I stared into my half-empty bowl. I really fell for him.
I know you did.
I put the framed picture of Drew inside my closet. Saying Drew's name felt like a tiny fissure in the wall I'd put up over the last hour.
It was time, honey. Whatever happened with Brody, it was still time.
I nodded, my shoulders heavy. That's the irony of it. I was finally taking steps forward, and he went backwards. The first tear fell, and then all hell broke loose. Once it started, I couldn't stop it. I sobbed like I hadn't in years. The cry felt so monumental. I wasn't just losing a boyfriend. I was losing Drew all over again, too. My heart had betrayed him for another man, and now I mourned for two losses. Indy hugged me tight.
Let it all go, honey. Let it all go.
Delilah, Chapter 37.
Could you tell Cum that you need more work done on your laptop?
Indy craned her neck, following the handsome and very young IT guy as he walked from my office to the elevator bank. I flipped open my computer, signed in, and checked that all of my files were intact. They were only updating my virus software, but last time I'd handed my laptop to anyone for maintenance, a week's worth of research had disappeared. I clicked on the steel folder and pulled up my itinerary for tomorrow.
You sure you don't mind doing this? Are you crazy? I can't wait!
Indy's cell phone buzzed. She looked down, smirked, and turned the phone to face me. The screen displayed a cartoon picture of a jackrabbit. I downloaded last week's game statistics from the company database as she answered,
Devin, sweetie, can you do me a favor?
I half listened to one side of the conversation as Indy asked her neighbor to feed her fish.
The food? Yes, it's in my bedroom. The small end table next to the bed.
There was a pause and then,
that would be great. How about if I make you some dinner when I get back to thank you?
She was smiling like a Cheshire cat when she hung up. What are you up to?
Nothing. Just being a friendly neighbor and asking Devin to feed my fish.
And you keep the fish food in your bedroom drawer? She shrugged.
It's Manhattan. Storage is at a premium.
I squinted at my all-too-happy friend. What else is in the drawer? She stood.
Why, whatever do you mean?
Did you or did you not just direct Pothead to go into your drawer that contains a vibrator and fish food?
No!
My face called bullshit.
It doesn't have a vibrator in it. Move that to my underwear drawer.
She walked to my office door.
It has black lace lingerie, fur handcuffs, condoms, and flavored lotion. Leave at 10 tomorrow?
Yes. And Indy?
Hmm?
Thank you for doing this. I'd barely slept last night. The thought of having to go into the steel locker room tomorrow and pretend that everything was fine made me feel like vomiting. I wasn't sure what I thought would happen after I ran out of the Regency 4 days ago, but it certainly wasn't what happened. Nothing. Nothing had happened. I had never been the kind of girl who wanted to be chased, but some sort of attempt at contact would have made me feel better. It made me wonder if Brody had just gone back into his suite and moved on. But then I'd seen a picture of him walking into practice the other day. His eyes had been dark and sunken. His head hung down in defeat. Against my better judgment, I called the press photo up on my computer. He looked like he'd single-handedly just lost the Super Bowl. It was all I could do to stop myself from calling him every time I saw it. And apparently I was into self-inflicted pain, because I had made a point of looking at the photo an awful lot over the last few days. A piece of me felt guilty for running away from him after he had just laid to rest a woman he cared for deeply. It had been 2 years since my dad died, and the agony of the loss was still fresh some days. But then I remembered that Brody wasn't alone. He had Willow to console him. I needed to force myself to remember that every time I got the urge to call him. And what if I called, and she answered the phone?
"You ready, Thelma?"
Indy popped her head into my office. "You bet, Louise." The drive to Maryland was 5 hours, although it actually went by quicker than I had expected. Indy was one hell of a road trip companion. Not only did she stock us up on road trip essentials, Pringles, trail mix, and Cheez-Its, but she somehow managed to keep my mind off of all things Brody Easton for at least a few hours of the drive. Our hotel was near the stadium. The corporate travel office had booked a block of rooms, knowing the city was going to be a madhouse during the days leading up to the first playoff games. I wanted to switch to anywhere the Steel weren't staying, but the city was booked solid. As we neared the stadium, Indy broached the subject.
"It's going to be impossible to avoid him. I scouted the nearest ice cream shops. There's a Baskin-Robbins one block to the east and a Scoops about 4 blocks to the west."
"Thanks," I chuckled.
"Can I ask you something?"
"Of course."
"You have to promise not to get pissed at me."
I didn't like the sound of that.
"Okay." "You believed Brody that he didn't cheat on you, but you don't believe that he is over Willow?"
It didn't make sense, but for some reason that was what I believed.
"Yes." "Have you wondered why you believe him about one thing but not the other?"
Even though I had pretty much done nothing but think about everything that had happened the last few days, if I was being honest, I actually hadn't questioned why I would trust him about one thing, yet not the other. "I guess it's because I feel like he can control his desires, but he can't control his heart."
"But how do you know his heart still loves her?"
The question seemed ridiculous to me. He loved her and lost her. Why wouldn't he still love her? Indy reached over and took my hand.
"Sweetie, are you talking about Brody and Willow? Or are you talking about you and Drew?"
Michael and Indy chatted away during dinner. There were 6 of us from WMBC having a business meeting at the hotel steakhouse, although we really hadn't talked much business at all. I tried in earnest to enjoy myself, but a perpetual state of glum followed me around like a shadow I couldn't outrun.
"What's your thinking on it, Delilah?"
Marvin Clapman was the head of the station's engineering division. He was one of the few remaining employees who'd been there since the station was founded 40 years ago. Having worked his way up from equipment repairman, he was now responsible for everything from the microphones working to the feed making it to the television in the viewer's living room. And he was staring at me expectantly, waiting for an answer.
I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?"
His eyes narrowed.
"The Pro Bowl. Is it better for the station that they keep it during the bye week between playoffs and the Super Bowl? Or should it come after, so the players from the 2 teams in the bowl that were selected can go?"
"Oh, I think it's better for the station that it stays in the bye week. People want something to watch during that off week, so the advertising is prime. But it's better for the players for it to be after."
Luckily, Aileen Fisher, One of Marvin's department heads jumped into the conversation, so I was off the hot seat. I tipped my head back as I downed the last of my wine and looked through the bottom of the glass. There was a commotion near the front of the restaurant. My stomach sank at seeing familiar faces, familiar player faces. The entire restaurant paused their dinner to watch the hostess seat them. Even if they weren't famous football players, the sight would still have caused a hush. Six extraordinary large men dressed in suits, one louder than the other. I breathed an enormous sigh of relief at not finding Brody amongst the crowd. Until I saw that the party of six was being seated at a table for eight, with two empty chairs. If I was distracted before, I was totally useless as I stared at the door, waiting to see who would fill the vacant seats. Indy was sitting diagonally across from me, and her eyes took in my panic. I knew the minute he walked in the door. I had been looking down at my cell phone in my lap, desperately trying anything to keep distracted, when a faint murmur began. The sound grew as the men made their way into the restaurant. Brody was with the offensive line coach. He didn't see me at first, but I couldn't look away. He looked sad, tired even, his normally cocky smile nowhere to be found. It opened a crack in me, and I was suddenly nervous that a wave of emotions would smash that crack open wide, and I wouldn't be able to control myself sitting in the restaurant. Halfway to his table, he stopped. I watched his eyes roam the room, searching for something. Since the day I'd met Brody, I'd felt him before I could see him. It seemed impossible, so I thought it was just my crazy romantic heart playing tricks on me. But when his eyes landed on mine, I knew I wasn't crazy. He had felt me in the room and searched for me. Our gazes locked. The impact of seeing the hurt in his dimmed green eyes was like a direct blow to the chest. I felt as though someone had kicked my chest open with a steel-toed boot and reached in and gripped my heart in their hand. We stayed that way for a few seconds, yet it felt like so much longer. Then, somehow, his eyes managed to hold mine while they swept over the table. His jaw tightened at finding Michael Langley sitting next to me. I saw the shutters go up on the window of pain in his eyes, right before he turned his head and walked to his table.
"What the hell just happened?" Marvin said.
The entire table had been watching the exchange go down. With his head buried in equipment, Marvin was quite possibly the only person at the station who didn't know about my relationship with Brody. Indy kicked Marvin under the table and answered for me, "Just some baller making goo-goo eyes at a pretty girl." The waitress appeared from nowhere. "Are you ready to order your main course?" "I'll have an apple martini." "Okay, and for dinner?" "I'm not hungry." Indy mumbled, "Shit," under her breath. Rightly so. I wasn't much of a drinker. And the last time I drank martinis, I was in bed for 2 days. I couldn't even remember half the night. At the time, I'd thought it was the scariest thing ever and never wanted to get that drunk again. But right then, I wanted whatever it would take to make me forget. And fast. During my first martini, I stole fleeting glances at Brody. During my second martini, I glared at him like he had just kicked my dog. After my third martini, I could barely hold back tears. He never looked my way all night. Indy saw my face and wrapped up dinner as quickly as possible. When we stood to leave, I couldn't hold the tears back any longer. They came so fast, they blurred my vision. When I wiped them away, the only thing that was clear
was Brody staring at me from the other side of the restaurant. I nosedived into the bed. Indy tried to get me to undress, but I was dead weight. She only succeeded in rolling me over and tugging my jacket off. She slipped off my shoes.
You okay?
I nodded and pulled my knees up, wrapping my arms around them. At least the crying had stopped.
I'm going to wash my face and brush my teeth. You need anything?
I shook my head. Alcohol made me mute. She was tying her hair into a knot on top of her head when there was a soft knock at the door. She went to the door, sighed loudly, and walked back to me.
It's Brody. I'll get rid of him. Stay here.
I nodded, doubting if I could get up, even if I wanted to. Is she okay? Brody's voice was low.
She's fine. Just needs a good night's sleep.
I want to see her.
I don't think that's a good idea.
You seem like a good friend. But just so you know ahead of time, I'm going to lift you up and deposit you outside this door if you don't move out of my way.
Brody,
Indy warned. I stumbled from the bed. Let him in. It's fine. I'm drunken, not so much. Indy shook her head.
Drunken, not so much, huh?
I waved her off with my hand. He's used to it, dealing with plastered women. Right, Beeston? My attempt at Brody Easton obviously had failed. Maybe that's what I should have done. Smoked some heroin, and then he'd fall deeply in love. Brody's jaw flexed. I turned to Indy, wrinkling my nose. Do you even smoke heroin? Indy shrugged. She looked very uncomfortable standing between us. She turned to me, cupped my face in her hands, and held my eyes.
Do you want me to stay?
I covered her hands with mine. I'm fine. She searched my face, then nodded, walking straight up to the hulking, brooding man standing in the doorway. She jabbed her finger into his chest.
I'll be back in 15 minutes. If you hurt her any more, so help me God, I'll blow the first guy from housekeeping with a set of pass keys, sneak into your room while you're sleeping, and when you wake up, you'll think Lorena Bobbitt had visited.
She grabbed her running shoes from the closet and disappeared after one more menacing look. Then it was just a slightly drunk me and Brody. Can we sit down?
Why? You're not staying long.
Brody clenched his teeth so hard, I thought he might crack a pearly white. Because you're swaying back and forth. Thought it might be better if you sat your ass down. I turned back to the room, not because he wanted me to sit, but because the room began to spin. I sat on the edge of the bed. Brody stood in front of me. I looked up. Even in my intoxicated state, I could see my future with just a glimpse into his green eyes. I was suddenly terrified. My eyes darted around the room. The dresser, the TV, the other bed. Anywhere but at the man standing right in front of me. He kneeled down. Delilah?
You should leave.
There's nothing to talk about. Bullshit. Nothing happened. I stared at my hands for a moment.
It doesn't matter.
Fuck if it doesn't. I waited, and then dragged my eyes up to his. Do you love her? He closed his eyes and took a deep breath before reopening them.
Yeah, but not like you think. We have a lot of history. I just don't want to see her hurting herself anymore.
When I looked away again, he put two fingers under my chin and lifted so our eyes met.
I love you, Delilah.
You can't love two women at the same time.
You can. You just don't love them the same. If you fall in love with someone else,
The other person you still love was never meant to be yours forever. His words eviscerated what was left of my fragile heart. I couldn't do that to Drew. I just couldn't. Brody covered my hands with his. Do you love me? I didn't answer. Delilah? I couldn't love him. I still love Drew. I was terrified as I looked into his eyes, that he could see through my lie. No, I don't. Delilah, Chapter 38.
You look like shit.
Every time I blinked my eyes, my head throbbed harder. I attempted to lift my aching skull from the pillow, but had to put it back down again. It was nearly 4 a.m. when we finally went to sleep. I'd cried so much, I was certain the headache was caused partly by dehydration.
What time is it?
My voice was a groan, littered with cracks.
Time for you to get your sorry ass out of bed.
I pulled the cover up over my head.
I liked you better when you felt sorry for me and sat up handing me tissues from the box.
After Brody had left, Indy held me for hours while I cried. I cried right through intoxicated and straight into a hangover.
You have to be at the pregame at 1, and it's going to take you an hour to get the swelling under your eyes down. I ordered you breakfast. Dry toast, a pot of coffee, orange juice, and a side order of ice for that face.
I pulled the blanket down enough to poke one eye out.
Where are you going?
She was tying her shoes.
For a run.
Ugh. I pulled the cover back over my head.
There's 2 Motrin on the table next to you and water. Suck it down and stay in bed until room service knocks.
Yes, Mommy. She chuckled.
Be back in an hour. Don't fall back asleep.
At least I look way better than I feel. I stared at my reflection in the shiny metal and glass door in the hallway leading to the locker room. The Steel had won 21-14, with Brody running in the winning touchdown with 30 seconds left in the game. He deserved to be happy. The last week had been awful, to say the least. A lesser player might not have been able to focus and play the way he had. I was proud of him, but also extremely anxious to walk into that locker room. Playoff games had triple the number of reporters. Everyone needed a soundbite for the news tonight, and most wanted more. The lines to speak to the players would be an hour long. We had 3 reporters going in today, not just me. Nick approached with Michael Langley at his side. You ready? Nick had flown in this morning, and I doubted he knew that Brody and I broke up.
Yes.
I picked up my bag and started to follow, but Michael stopped me, putting his hand on my arm. You okay? I forced a smile.
I'm ready. Don't worry.
That's not what I asked. Are you okay?
I took a breath. I will be. Thank you.
He nodded.
We waited in line forever and worked out our attack plan of player interviews. Michael claimed